Welcome to Hot Grease. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. This Heritage Radio Network program is brought to you by White Oak Pastures. White Oak Pastures cattle are raised in a manner that has stood the test of time. It begins with southern sunshine, unpolluted country air, and fertile coastal soil. The cattle are allowed to roam the pastures and graze freely on sweet native grasses all of their lives. White Oak Pastures all-natural grass-fed beef has been available in all the Whole Foods store in the mid-Atlantic states. We hope that you will support their program through your purchase of beef through Whole Foods stores. For more information, go to whiteoakpastures.com. Every week on Hot Grease, we bring people back to what's great in food. Culinary traditions, cooking at home, knowing your farmer, or even growing your own food. I spotlight good food fighters and the culture of the food movement, from chefs to tastemakers to moms on a budget. Today, we'll be talking pie, social movements, and food. If you're listening live to Hot Grease Food Radio, our number here at Heritage Radio Network is 718-497-2128. Call us. Definitely call us the last 10 minutes of the show as we're going to be doing reflections on Dr. Martin Luther King. Nothing brings people together better than pie. In the studio, we have one of my favorite Brooklynites, Megan Pasca. Meg is a beekeeper, an urban homesteader, and creator of the fourth annual Brooklyn Pie Contest. Welcome back to Hot Grease, Meg.
Thank you for having me.
In the world of pie contests, what makes Brooklyn Pie Contest different from the others?
Well, I guess what makes our pie contest a little different than the others is that we are trying to raise funds for local food organizations. And, you know, also I think that we get a pretty high caliber of pie being entered to this contest. So it's not your grandmother's pie contest by any means.
Ah, so this fall I was trying to nibble on pie at a similar event. But I was telling you before the show, the line was like wrapped around the building like a Beastie Boys concert. I didn't get in. I mean, I think it started like 4 or 3 or something. It was like 20 minutes after and no one could get in. So what's your location and space this year?
This year we are going to be having the event at the Bedford. It's a restaurant on Bedford and North 11th. It's divided into two spaces, so it's actually really conducive to having the pie contest. It'll be in the back bar, so if you want to get there at 5:30 with your pie or your fork in hand, you'll probably get in. Otherwise, you know, you can go sit at the bar in the front and you know, sneak in here and there to sort of see what's going on.
Do I need to bring my own fork? And what about money? Do I need to pay, or what's the deal?
You only need to bring your own fork if you want. but the cost to enter a pie, there are actually no costs to enter a pie. If you bring a pie, you get in for free. If you just want to come and eat, then you would just give us $10 at the door. That money will go to Growing Chefs. It's Annie Novak's Field to Fork program.
Yeah, I think she's going to come on the line in like, 10, 20 seconds. Ms. Novak, I think Jack may have her on the line to talk about the organizations. Let's talk about the organizations, Growing Chefs, more so the organizations over the last 3 years. You're number one, you're number two, you're number three. You gave money to...
Yeah, last year we raised funds for BK Farmyards. Stacy Murphy and B. Ayer, they're a decentralized farming organization, and they've taken on a pretty big project at the high school for public service. They have a 1 acre size farmyard there. Last season was their first season. So we raised quite a bit of money to put towards that project, which is really exciting. We had 63 pies entered
Wow.
Yeah, the judges were were a little overwhelmed, but we kept them.
You're going to have a little less than that this time, right?
Yeah, we're cutting it off at 50. You know, the judges really were troopers last time, but we don't want to have to force them to.
And the other 2 years, what organizations did you give money to?
The two organizations previous to this, we didn't actually raise any funds for any particular organization, but I had done a bunch of fundraising back in Baltimore, so when the pie contest started to grow, I was like, well, you know, people are really excited about it. Let's do some good with it. So then I decided that turning it into a fundraiser would probably be more beneficial to the community than just picking out on pie.
Speaking of great organizations, we have the Annie Novak on the phone.
Hi, good morning.
Good. Well, it's afternoon. I think you're on the West Coast, but it's like 3-something here. So Annie's on the phone. Welcome to Hot Grease. She's founder of Growing Chefs and Eagle Street Rooftop Garden. Welcome to Hot Grease. I know you're a friend of Heritage.
Yes, I know. It's always such a pleasure to be on, and thanks for having me on Hot Grease, Nicole.
Annie, people have seen dozens of online and print features about your rooftop farm, but tell us more about Growing Chefs.
Growing Chefs, Meg said it very succinctly, it's a food education organization dedicated to the idea that you can teach folks, mostly children, about food from field to fork. And for me, that means something really simple. I mean, when we first started in 2005, it was with the MO, broccoli is not boring. And it isn't. I mean, I find such a pleasure in food, and a lot of that to me is not just the way it appears on your plate, but also the whole backstory, how it's grown, where it comes from, how that changes its flavor, you know, the ecology behind food and the environmentalism behind it. I think it's all really connected, and it's such a great way to get kids outside and kids in the kitchen, two places that we really just don't spend enough time with them.
Totally. So lastly, what would be your ingredients for a pie that's symbolic of the food movement that's happening in Brooklyn?
Is this for me or for Meg, or do we both get to say?
Because
there's a world of pie.
This is for you.
I would say, you know, the really beautiful thing about the way people cook in Brooklyn at the moment is that the food that's seasonal and the food that's freshest and the very simplest of produce, you can sort of put anything together. I like to call it sort of frittata style thinking, because for years, you know, people would cook in a way that was just reflective of what they had available. And frankly, I find that some of my best cooking creations come from taking a walk through the farmer's market and just seeing what I hadn't seen the week before and trying it out. So what would that be right now? You're asking me a January question?
Let's say
we'd make a quiche. I know eggs are still going strong.
Yeah, more so symbolic of what pie you think sums up the movement, the social movement that's going on in Brooklyn right now.
Yeah, I mean, so hopefully, the funny thing for me is a lot of what's really popular in Brooklyn particularly is there seems to be a lot more culinary awareness around well-raised meat and grass-fed beef, and I think that's really awesome. I think it's really neat that people are finally starting to question where their meat comes from. So it's funny for me to say, though, because I'm a lifelong vegetarian, and Growing Chefs is actually, without it being outspokenly so, is a vegetarian organization, just because I think our disconnect from vegetables is stronger than our disconnect from almost any other kind of food.
Mm-hmm.
But let's be generous and say that perhaps the food movement in Brooklyn could be best summed up in some sort of meat-based pie. And this is where
uh-huh.
Meg might have to step in and give me some advice.
Uh-huh. So people who are listening and they want more information about Growing Chefs, in addition to coming out on this Sunday, the time is what? What time does the pie eating start, Meg?
The doors open at 5:30 promptly, because we're cutting it off at the first 50 pies in the door. The first 50 pies will be judged by the judges. Anything that comes afterwards is welcome to be shared with the crowd, but it will not be judged by the judges, so keep that in mind.
So people who, we hope that everyone that's listening will come out, but I know we have people on the West Coast and in between that listen to Hot Grease. Where can they find out more information about Growing Chefs, Annie?
We are on the web at growingchefs.org, and if you track us, you can also track us via Facebook, friending us at Growing Chefs on Facebook. And the same goes for the Eagle Street Rooftop Farm, which is at rooftopfarms.org.
One last question. Are you doing any other Growing Chefs? Are you doing Growing Chefs events outside of Brooklyn for people who are interested in connecting children to veggies and learning?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the successful things about our program is we've been able to find a really wide network of educators who are green thumbs and good cooks, and we've set up independent programs with a number of schools, and that's something we're always open to if people want to contact us. And this coming week, actually, at Sarah Lawrence College in Westchester, we're speaking on behalf of the Westchester Land Trust to connect people who are urban eaters to upstate land and land preservation, which is a really important reason to eat locally. And I'm excited about both that, and then, of course, this week and getting to eat massive amounts of delicious pie.
Yes. Annie, thank you so much for joining us on Hot Grease. You have to come in the studio. We have to connect soon and meet face-to-face. I don't think we
thank
have.
Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much.
Meg, you're going to stay with us for segment 2 and 3. Listeners, keep tuning in. We're going to take a short break and come back with Dr. Frederick Opie. Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Check out our program schedule and show archives on heritageradionetwork.com. You can also subscribe to Hot Grease via iTunes. You just click on subscribe and you can get the updated shows via your MP3 player. Happy Dr. Martin Luther King Day to everyone that's listening live on Hot Grease. Listening live on Heritage Radio Network, what a perfect time to chat social movements and food. Hot Grease is fortunate to have one of the top Black food culture scholars on the phone. Let's welcome back Dr. Frederick Opie. Dr. Opie, welcome to Hot Grease.
How are you, Nicole? Good to talk to you again.
I'm great. Just want to let listeners know you are the author of Hog and Hominy, Soul Food from Africa to America, and visiting associate professor of African and African diaspora history and food ways at Babson College. And you're also a food blogger.
For sure.
Yes.
I've actually been doing a series on Dr. King for today's holiday. So there's some good information along with related recipes that your listeners will probably enjoy.
Yes. So Dr. Opie, there are quite a few stark differences. Are there any stark differences of the current social movements and movements of the past?
Stark differences. Kind of interesting. I just came back from Boston University, where Dr. King received his doctorate degree. And some of the speakers were talking about social movements now and the current generations that are college students versus when Dr. King was alive. And some of the things that are different, some of the things that are similar, first of all, that students are just as much involved in social justice issues as they were in Dr. King's, despite what popular culture thinks. Students are alive and actively involved in trying to resolve some of the wrongs in this world. Now, the techniques have changed, but some people are still also learning from prior techniques. And I'll give you an example. When people would organize and mobilize during Dr. King's, his life, and I think of the Montgomery bus boycott in 1955, that's the first protest that King comes to the forefront. It was mostly making phone calls and getting people out to a local church to listen to what we were going to do next as a movement. So that would be the way you'd get a phone call, or people would also go and run off flyers. That's how people would learn about a movement and about a meeting. Now, today, what students are doing is using things like Twitter, Facebook, and the Internet. That's how people are getting the word out more than anything else. And then they have the cell phone where they're texting people. So people are mobilizing and getting out, but how you get people to that point or to that meeting to learn what to do next, those things may have changed.
Explain the role of food in the civil rights movements or other human rights movements of the past.
Well, that's a topic that I started working on at the level of a blog probably about a year ago. And I've been really fascinated from the American Revolution all the way up to the Civil Rights Revolution of the role of food. And one of the things you see, and I first saw this in Montgomery in 1955, is the role that food plays in revolutions. And what you see in Montgomery is the black community there is mobilizing against a very powerful state, the Montgomery state, the local community, the state officials. And they don't want to ride the bus. They were trying to make a point that we don't like the Jim Crow policies on the bus. So they agree to stay off the bus. But the issue is that majority of the particularly the women in that town, work as domestic workers, and they have to get to work. So how do you maintain a bus strike when you need people to have transportation getting to work? And one of the things that you see is they organize this thing called the Montgomery Improvement Association. And one of the most important ways that money is raised to provide transportation for women to get to work is through the sale of food. So you have an organization that calls itself basically the Club from Nowhere. And why do they use that term, Club from Nowhere? Because if their names get out and the local police find out who these women are, they're going to be persecuted and prosecuted. So they create this Club from Nowhere, and by the sale of baked goods, they raise a lot of money that keeps the Montgomery Improvement Association in their self-created modes of transportation running during this very long and costly strike.
Most people think of Southern food. You just talked about the South and Montgomery. They think of Southern food and civil rights. What other regional foods are associated with justice fighting and the civil rights movement?
I would think mostly when I'm thinking about the civil rights movement, because it's mostly a northern-based movement, is that's what people are cooking. They're cooking down home Southern food, and then by 1968 we're calling it soul food. But I even saw with the movement in New York that was involved with the author and well-known cook, Vertebrae Grosvenor. She worked with SNCC in New York and Harlem. And one of the ways that they raised money for the SNCC chapter in Harlem was cooking the food. And it was Southern food. So I think these are kind of traditions that go on. But it really has to do with the movement and who's involved in it and what their ethnic group is. Because you can look at probably other movements. Like I've studied the Cuban Revolution. I've studied the Spanish-American War. And you see people in Cuba making food based on their cuisine and their history. So I think it really has to do where the movement is and who's involved in the movement.
Let's move to folks that weren't at the podium, the unseen people of the movement. Who were those people?
Well, the most important person in Montgomery in that Club from Nowhere is a woman named Georgia Gilmore. And she was a woman who, at the start of the Montgomery Improvement Association and the strike, she testified on behalf of the Montgomery Improvement Association that the people were being treated unjustly. And because she went public and testified, her employer, which was a local kind of five-and-dime cafeteria downtown at Montgomery, fired her. So she was unemployed. She also lived about three blocks from Dr. King's house. And remember, in 1955, Dr. King is roughly 25 years old, new in town, and he quickly learns about Georgia Gilmore and her cooking skills. So he knew her, and he's the one that went to her when she was fired, provided the capital and the encouragement to start her own business. So she became a caterer and opened a small restaurant out of her house. And so she's really the heart and soul of the cooking operation of the Club from Nowhere.
Wow. Amazing. Do you, and that story is a story that I've definitely never heard. And people who are listening and intrigued by some of these stories that we don't hear, do you have any recommendations on readings, books, or videos about food and the civil rights movement?
No, that's the work I'm trying to put together now. So, if they go to my blog, it's probably be the best place, and I don't say that because it's mine, but I just, there are some things. There's some things on NPR. There's a group of scholars They call themselves the Kitchen Sisters.
Yeah.
And they have a bunch of posts and stories they do on NPR called Hidden Kitchens.
Yeah.
So they have talked about Georgia Gilmore. You also have a story done by the Southern Foodways Alliance and John T. Edge, who's done a little bit of work on this. But it's mostly at Montgomery. I haven't seen people do any kind of systematic thing. So I'm coming up with a book that I hope they get published within the next 2 years called Feeding the Revolution. And it looks at the role of not just the civil rights movement, but again, as I mentioned, the American Revolution and other revolutionary movements.
And I must say, people who are interested in just learning about Black food ways, your book Hog and Hominy is like the Bible. I tell everyone to get Hog and Hominy, as well as Jessica B. Harris, all of her books. She has a new book coming out called High on the Hog. She'll be in New York. Well, she lives here in New York, but on Thursday, I think she's going to be at the Tenement Museum. So there's a little bit of work that's talking about Black food ways and civil rights. And lastly, I just would love to hear your reflections about Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday and what it means to you and mean to your children and the generation of people all over the country who are doing food justice work.
Well, you know, I think it's important to remember how Dr. King died. He died in Memphis, Tennessee, fighting for sanitation workers, for working class people, and for opportunity for them just to have a just wage and a just life, and to be able to put food on the table for their families. So he knew when he went there that it was an unpopular movement among many in the middle class and upper class Black community, and that it was an important movement. So as you see the end of his life, he's moving increasingly towards these international movements and these working class movements. So when I think of Dr. King, I don't think of Dr. King necessarily in a larger civil rights movement that's about the end of segregation or the end of Jim Crow. At the end of his life, I think he's about basic things like, you know, justice and peace for working class people. So that's what I think of when I think of Dr. King.
Well put. Dr. Frederick Opie, thank you so much for coming on Hot Grease. You'll definitely be on in the future. We love you here. Have a great Dr. MLK Day and talk to you soon.
Okay, Nicole, have a good one, and bye to your listeners.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Keep listening, listeners. More Hot Grease in a few seconds. Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network. I am your host, Nicole Taylor. Hot Grease is produced and engineered by Jack Inslee. And this program is being sponsored by my favorite beef and protein producers in Georgia, White Oak Pastures. Let me give a Southern girl's hug to Roberta's Restaurant. It's packed here at Roberta's, y'all. Located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York. Roberta's is also the location of Heritage Radio Network. No matter if you're Black, white, green, or butterbean, Dr. King believed that, quote, truth is beauty, brotherhood and peace is more precious than diamonds, silver, or gold, end quote. And that is like the last line of his speech of him accepting the Nobel Peace Prize in Oslo, Norway. I thought I would take this last segment to run down some of my listener and fan comments from Facebook and Twitter about what they're going to be doing on MLK Day. What are their thoughts about MLK? Meg Pasca, the wonderful Meg Pasca, is still in the studio. So we just briefly talked about how folks in Brooklyn, or people probably all over the world and country, we kind of get stuck in our own silos and don't share or talk to other people, and we have so much to learn from other people.
Tell me how you think that is tied to what Dr. King believed in and how you feel about that and today being King Day, King Holiday.
You know, I have a lot of really passionate people surrounding me, and they're all really wonderful, intelligent, talented, but I feel like a lot of times, you know, you surround yourself with people who share a very similar goal. So, you know, the last segment was really refreshing. I really enjoyed hearing a different perspective about, you know, an activist who was just as passionate about something, and it's something that the average person tends to lose sight of sometimes when they're focused on their own lives, basically. Yeah. So it's refreshing to hear and be reminded of, that there are people in this world who really fight the good fight.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, totally. And I think I know everyone has this different view or thought of what Dr. King means to them or what his legacy is, but your last comment is so what he embodies, that everyone has a fight or something they need to be fighting for, and definitely we all should be working together. And my wish is that people would kind of like dig deeper into Dr. King's life beyond his famous I Have a Dream speech. I think Dr. Opie talked about it a little bit. People just look at this King speech and they stop. They don't realize, you know, the last year or so of his life, he started talking more about the Vietnam War. He started talking more about sanitation rights and food rights for people, basic human stuff that no matter what color you are, it's important. But people don't talk about that. I mean, and, you know, some people say that's one of the reasons why he's dead, is because he started talking about real issues that were not just local to the South, but international issues. I thought it'd be really cool. I got to shout out some of the people on social media that has some great comments or are doing some great things, the tasteful things to honor King's legacy. Do you eat Lara bars? Do you like the Lara bars?
I don't really eat packaged bars
very often. You make your own granola.
Yeah.
Okay, well,
sorry, I don't mean to be a snob about it. I mean, I've had them before.
No, I mean, you know, I do both. You know, our listeners here on Hot Grease, we have a variety of listeners, Miss Pasca. So some people are making their own bars and some people are buying or they're doing both. So my favorite bar to buy is Lara Bar. And so they actually retweeted a link of the Nobel Peace Prize from Dr. King. It didn't have this, Lara Bar messaging or anything. They just basically did a basic YouTube retweet. And I thought that was really cool. It was tasteful. They weren't trying to like market off his birthday. Obviously, someone on their social media team or marketing team felt like, hey, let me just retweet that. So I saw that actually yesterday. So I thought I would shout Lara Bar out. So I listened to that like 3 or 4 times this morning. It's a very short acceptance speech, but it's very powerful. So what's up, Lara Bar? Friend of the show. I talk about Adriana Valle so much. Adriana, wow. It's like Meg's been on the show 3 times. Melissa's been on here like a million times. And I definitely think you and Meredith Mojaleski have been mentioned 2 million times. But you said that you're spending the day writing about food politics, more so food policy work in Africa. And that's what you're doing today. And then you also had a very funny comment about your son. I thought it was hilarious. He was watching MLK speech videos on YouTube, and you mentioned that he said, Mom, I didn't know they had video back then. I thought that was absolutely hilarious. So, and it also made me smile that little Jasper is able to soak in and see a man that, you know, loved everybody and definitely was about equality and peace and harmony for everyone. My friend Liz Neves, Spoke the Hub. I've never been to Spoke the Hub. Have you been to Spoke the Hub before?
I haven't.
I guess it's in, I'm not sure where it's located in Brooklyn. But I guess it's like a shared community space. They do yoga there. Maybe like homesteading classes there.
Yeah,
SpokeTheHub.com. So today they had like all day series of classes from like meditation, nonviolent stuff, kind of infusing some of King's legacy into their classes today. So Liz Neves is going to be doing that. And one of my favorite things today, Jauntsetter.com, which is a I don't know if you would call this like an email or blog or magazine. I've been getting it for a while. It's for New York travelers. They did a great piece. Dorothy, who's the founder, the head of JauntSetter.com, and it is called In Honor of Martin Luther King Jr. And she kind of talks about travel in Martin Luther King Jr., the barriers in the 50s and 60s, and how, you know, the buses were segregated. And it wasn't this marketing email that had links to Amtrak or anything like that. She, to me, it spoke to me. She spoke from her heart to kind of talk about travel in the 50s and 60s and maybe inspire someone to go to Memphis and to the Lorraine Motel and all that good stuff. And then she went on to talk about how 33% of Americans, or is it only 33% of Americans have today off. So the other 70% are working, but some of the things you could do even if you're working, such as give blood. So they talked about that on there. So yeah. And then I saw a whole bunch of other stuff on social media. Did you see a whole bunch of MLK tweets and stuff on Facebook and social media?
I don't, not as much as, not as much interesting content as I would have liked, truthfully.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw a lot of quotes.
Yeah, a lot of pictures being posted, but I don't think people are really, like you said, I don't think they're really digging too deep.
Yeah, they just do the I Have a Dream speech. Yeah. But that's okay. Look, we're
no
on the
judgment,
show. We're,
no judgment.
Look, we're digging deep today. I think Dr. Frederick Opie dig deep. And then even what you're doing with the pie contest is kind of digging deep and is in the same spirit and vein of what Dr. King was about, using your gifts and talents to lift up the next brother, no matter what color they are. And I definitely think you're doing that.
Aww,
with your fourth annual pie contest. So listeners, thank you for supporting and listening to Hot Grease. I hope that you had a fabulous and wonderful Dr. MLK Day. There are a few more hours left. Go out and do something positive. Do something that Dr. King would be proud of. And keep listening to Hot Grease. As you know, you can join me here every Monday live at 3:30. And until then, always take the road less traveled.